Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the Mental Toughness and Body Show. Today we are going to strap in and strap on as we talk about sexual health. Now I will put a disclaimer at the front of this show that there may be some language and some topics in here that may not gel with you. Probably not suitable for kids. Okay, I'll say that up front. But anyway, some people find sexual health a taboo subject and just don't talk about it, especially men. But our guest today is going to discuss the groundbreaking work he is dedicated to improving men's erectile fitness. And so on this podcast, we've interviewed people from all walks of life, from your A-list celebrities to billionaires, gold medalists. And today we have Dr. Elliot Justin, who has extensive experience in emergency medicine, and he's also the founder and CEO of FirmTech. Love the name. Dr. Elliot, welcome to the show. How are you?
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So I guess first off, why is sexual health such a difficult topic for people to talk about?
Well, I wish that it wouldn't, and doctors are part of the problem. So for example, sexual health is extremely important to people. I can tell you as an emergency medicine physician in the past, that short of a heart attack or a stroke, there's no emergency that commands a man's attention immediately as the inability to get it up. Mm. So, but we don't. Doctors don't fail our patients that we don't discuss this with them. I'm speaking for Australian doctors and American doctors and UK doctors. We don't ask people about the status of their sexual health. We don't ask them about what's going on in their marriage, what's going on in their romantic partnerships or sexual partnerships. And we prescribe medications without warning people about the sexual side effect of those medications.
Yeah.
So we're a big part of the problem. The two big erection killers, if you will, for men and for women are antihypertensives and SSRI antidepressants. And I know the usage in Australia is the same as the United States. We're talking about more than half the adult population take one or both of those medications by the time they're 50. And obviously if someone cannot perform sexually, it has a major impact on their state of mind and the quality of their relationships.
So one of the things that I find, so I'm 50, turning 56 this year. So my parents were born in the 40s, 1940 and 1944. They're no longer with us, but I cannot remember having any conversations around sexual health with my parents at all. You learned it from some sort of cartoon type book in science, I think we did in year 7 or year 8. And there were never really any conversations about it. Do you think now, I work in the health and fitness industry where I spend most of my time. And it's not one of the questions that I ask people when I first meet them, how's your sexual health? Right. How frequent are you? Do you have any problems getting an erection or, vice versa, what the equivalent is for women and losing their libido and so forth. And yet as I get to know people, you can tell that it's an issue, but it's kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah. You should ask.
Yeah. Like you're saying that the doctors are part of the problem. It's almost like saying, hey doc, by the way, having a few problems, and there's like, I'll give you something on the way out. And you're like, you're holding your hand out the back and they pass you a pill on the way out. So I suppose my question from that is it changing? Is the conversation changing now, do you think? Obviously you're playing your part in this to it. But look, I said to you, I've done 3,000 odd episodes now on my podcast. I think I've spoken about sexual health maybe a couple of times. I talk about it generally, not as specific as we're going to get today, but yeah, is the conversation changing?
Not fast enough. So Rob, I'll give you an example. We live in this age of really wonderful age of healthcare wearables. I'm certain if you're involved in fitness, you're using wearables or encouraging people to use
your watches, your heart monitors, all that.
Exactly. Or Aura, Whoop, Apple Watch. I'm not endorsing these products, although I do like the Aura, but there's this huge gap, which is sex. There's something bizarre about that. I'm in business. My wife is my marketing director, and we look at each other kind of every 2 or 3 days. Like, how did we end up doing this? Why didn't people think about this earlier? So why is sex so important to health? Well, about 3 years ago, I wasn't thinking about this at all. I had on my resume something I call Project O, O standing for the obvious of orgasm. Yeah. I live in Montana and I own horses, and I sometimes have this illusion that I'm not just a horseman, I'm a centaur. I'm one with my horse. And that can lead to some fairly reckless behavior. And I managed to, I basically shattered my chest on a tree. A tree had fallen over the trail and someone had cut it so you could walk underneath it, but you couldn't gallop underneath it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was not expecting that obstacle, and it broke 6 ribs and 6 vertebrae. And as I was lying there on the ground, realizing that I wasn't going to die, but I was going to be a lot of pain, I thought, what's been done to rehabilitate men who've had spinal injuries, or women for that matter, spinal injuries, in terms of sexual function? Because it's something I'll share this with you. I call the cock-up sign. I've been trying to popularize this in the United States, and now I'll try to popularize it in Australia. If you're doing sports and you feel that you have a spinal cord injury, if you can cock up your big toe, you'll be able to urinate, defecate, and fornicate, which is a relief. After you decide you're not going to die. So I then looked at the medical literature and found a couple of papers where researchers had implanted electrodes by both the pudendal nerve and the cavernous nerve to reproduce erections in men had injuries. So it'd be like cardiac pacemaker, only be a pacemaker for human sexuality.
Okay.
I had it done to myself and it didn't work. But this your professor of urology at the University of Utah heard about this, and I was involved in medical technology at that time. He said, I want to count the number of nocturnal erections that men have, because it's a leading indicator of man's cardiovascular health. And I said, watching my language, WTF, I don't understand what the significance of that is. Why is that important? We all know about, I don't know what to call in Australia. We all know about morning wood. We laugh about it. We talk about it. We joke about it with our partners. But I didn't realize that the directions that we have while we're sleeping are so important. So a healthy man has 3 to 5 per night.
Right.
We don't know about them because we're asleep. And they're a leading indicator. So high blood pressure is associated with stroke or heart attack. Leading indicator means it's predictive. So if you were monitoring a man's nocturnal erections, you can predict that man's going to have a heart attack or a stroke within 2 to 5 years, depending upon how bad that number is. So this is really profoundly important. This is like another vital sign.
And so if I could just clarify that. So the higher your blood pressure, so if you're hypertensive, you're less likely to have erections. Is that how it
correct.
Works?
Correct. High blood pressure, diabetes, atherosclerosis, they reduce the number of erections. So and before...
Physiologically, why is that the case?
Blood flow. Well, diabetes is two things. So in order to have an erection, you have to have good blood flow, and not just blood flow in, but good return out. Mm-hmm. You have to have intact muscles, and I'll get to the muscles in just 1 second. And you have to have nerves that are working. So diabetes impact is both kills the nerves and it impacts, it leads to calcifications in the small blood vessels, leading to less blood flow, leading to stiffer muscles.
Yeah.
These are muscles that you can't exercise in the gym. So just 1 second, Annie, turn it off, please. Sorry about that.
That's right.
This is smooth muscle function. It's not skeletal muscle function. So there's a lot of focus today in your world, the fitness world, on paying more attention to men's pelvic floor. As men have issues with pelvic floor as they get older, just the way women do. And there's contention that strength in the pelvic floor can have a positive impact on erectile dysfunction.
Okay.
I'm not persuaded that that's the case. I think there are many important reasons for man to strengthen his pelvic floor. But sexual function is a smooth muscle function. The only way to exercise smooth muscles is to use them or lose their function. So if you and I right now, Rob, if we said, hey, we're going to starve, we're just going to go drink water for the next 2 weeks. And then we went out to a 5-star restaurant together and gorged and ate 10 courses, we get sick. Because the smooth muscle and gastrointestinal system will have atrophy from disuse because we're starving ourselves. It's the same way with sex. Men, women too, but men need to exercise the smooth muscles that are involved with climax and ejaculation, or they lose them.
Right.
So use it or lose it.
So
when this doctor, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. You keep going.
Yeah, when this urologist challenged me with counting on nocturnal erections, I thought, well, that's this is like a sixth vital sign. I mean, every man over the age of 45 or 50 should want to know about the nocturnal erections, but can we do better than that? Because what are men more interested in? What's going on while they're sleeping, or what's going on while they're making love?
Forming, yeah.
Right. So there, and obviously the more, so he like a lot of, I'll say a lot of straight urologists, he was not familiar with erection rings, which we call cock rings, which you call the same thing too, down there in the Southern Hemisphere. So most of these, in order to come up with a way of counting the nocturnal erections, I had to make an erection ring that could be worn for, you know, eight hours while people are sleeping. Well, most of these conventional rings that are made today are made out of hard silicone. They've made the same way for the last 150 right. years. So
it's like a tight rubber band, effectively.
It's like a gasket or a noose, if you will, on your favorite organ, if you will. So,
and if you wear that all night, you could be in strife.
You could be in big trouble. You really shouldn't wear these things more than 20, 30 minutes, otherwise, because they can cut off the blood supply.
Yeah.
And if you're a man who already has hypertension or diabetes or both, or you're taking medication that compromises your blood supply, using those kind of rings and that can be dangerous. So I need to.
I'm going to show my naivety here. I don't even know what they're used for and why you would wear one.
Well, they use to sustain an erection. So
okay.
Most men with erectile dysfunction, the problem is that they can't, it's not that they can't attain an erection. The problem is they can't sustain an erection. They get an erection, they lose it. And that could be from a variety of factors, anxiety, diseases, medications, alcohol, recreational drug use. So the purpose of these rings is to sustain an erection that is fading, if you will.
Right.
And every man, as he gets older, will suffer this problem. You're still a young guy. I'm joking with you. I'm 70 years old. What happened? So, you know, if I flew to Australia, sat in a plane for 15, 16 hours, my ankles would swell. My socks would get tight. My rings would get tight in my fingers. Yeah. Why is that? Because we have smooth muscle around our small veins, our venules, that pump blood back to our heart. And as we get older, those muscles weaken. So we leak fluid from our veins into our capillary tissue. Well, the same thing happens with the penis as it ages. The muscles around the veins get weaker. So you might be getting blood in, but the blood goes out, you know, faster. So the purpose of these rings, Rob, is to sustain the erections, but they're not comfortable, they're not safe, and they cut off the arterial circulation. So I had to invent a ring. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're going there. I was going to say, so you then had to develop something that is obviously got some technology within it as well, so that it's safe to wear all night and gives you the data.
Exactly. So I was the idea for this ring really came from observing things on my wife. So my wife has a stress ball on her desk, and I thought, oh, stress balls are made out of this, like this ring here. This is made out of a really soft, flexible elastomer. So let's, instead of making rings out of hard silicone, which is uncomfortable, let's make a ring out of elastomer. So it's soft. So it doesn't block the arterial flow in. It only constrains the venous return. And then it needs to be easy on, off, and safe. You look like you're a lean guy. I'm a lean guy. Most men your age, my age, they look down. They don't
see anything.
They see belly.
Yeah.
And that means these conventional rings are challenging. You can't see where you're going.
Yeah, well, that's so true. Yeah.
All our rings close with a hook.
Okay.
So the idea for this came from the bra. And I would guess.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know whether, are you married? If I might ask? No.
No.
So I would guess that around the world, half of heterosexual sex starts when a man is being asked to scratch his wife's back after she takes a bra off at night. Why? Because bras are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They have silicone in the back. It irritates the skin. Silicone makes skin adapt to it. Elastomers adapt to the skin. Now, women don't put on bras on their head. Over their head, they open and close with a hook. And I thought, oh, well, let's make a ring with a hook. So it's easy on, easy off. And then there's technology in it. There's sensor. There's a pressure sensor there.
Yeah.
And inside the hook, there's a strain gauge. So as the penis expands in girth, it presses against the sensors. Then we can then measure the hardness, the firmness of the ring. We can measure the duration of the erection. And worn over, so it can be worn during sex. It could also be worn overnight. So utilizing this technology, men can now count the number of nocturnal erections, which is the leading indicator of the cardiovascular health. They can measure duration, the firmness of the erections while they're having sex. So the men and their healthcare providers can now measure the impact of diseases. It becomes a way of monitoring your diabetes or monitoring your blood pressure. They can, men can measure the impact of the medications. And then in this world, as in the fitness world, there are a lot of supplements that make claims to making men firmer.
Yeah.
Do they work? Well, right
now, no idea.
If you have data, if you can track. If you can track it, you can hack it. So the great. So this device is really, it's really disruptive, because it shows people. I mean, there's a multi-billion-dollar nutraceutical world promising men more virility, if you will, with pills. We found some injectables that work, but we haven't found a single pill that will actually improve a man's sexual performance.
Yeah, wow. Okay. So then can I say, just going back to that, because I love data, going back to the device and the data. So that then just what connects with an app on your phone, you can say, I've had seven.
I'll show you.
Seven. I've got the, how it compares against average or for your age and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you got it. So that's my daughter. But we're in the Google and Apple Play stores. I'll show you what the data looks like. Skip. So this is, it's kind of like Whoop Aura. We basically show people score, how many nocturnals, how long they last.
Okay.
I'll show you what recording looks like. So this is not violating anyone's privacy, because this is me last night. So I have 5 nocturnal erections, and that's good. So, I follow this the way my blood pressure. I check my blood pressure a couple of times a month. I check my score a couple here a couple of times a month. Men who are just starting new medication, I'm in good health, but men who have diabetes or high blood pressure, men who were getting prostate surgery, this data, some of the, that we have men who follow the data every day. So in this, again, as I said earlier, this age of healthcare wearables, we're delivering data that is potentially life-changing and even life-saving. If people can, what do men care more about? As I discussed earlier, the fact that the blood pressure is up 10 points, or the fact that their penis isn't working. And that's an obvious question. So we want people to develop a positive relationship with their wearables. I mean, people who have smartwatches, smart rings, even digital scale, they will use that tool more often because they have it, and they become more aware of their weight or their sleep or their diet. With this device, we hope the men will become more aware of how their sexual health is a reflection of the cardiovascular health or the medications. It'd also be nice if people would make love more.
Yeah, for sure. And so from a business perspective, how do you, because prior to getting, your people reached out to me and with you, and I thought, okay, this is a great topic for men, or for women too, but how do we get this into the mainstream? Like how does it become just, like your Apple Watch or whatever, where it's like, okay, well, if I go back to those 3 movies, which I believe weren't that great, but the books, All the Women Tell Me Were Awesome, the 50 Shades thing, and what that did globally to open people's mind to having more sex conversations and talking about like fantasies and keeping things safe and all that kind of stuff, but just really different things in it. How do we make this part of that conversation?
That's a great question. So I think there, obviously, money is a major obstacle because it's marketing. But right now, there are 4 papers, research papers, that have been accepted for publication this year so far. And there'll be another 4 to 6 publications similarly. So by this time next year, if you and I can speak February, March next year, there'll be 10 research publications so that urologists and sexologists will be aware of this device. Our goal by this time next year is to establish, I showed you the erectile fitness score as a standard for care for men with ED and for research. So right now, if you and I went to both of us, you know, went to a cardiologist and we said, gee, you know, walking down the driveway, I got a little pressure in my chest. And that cardiologist just listened with a stethoscope and said, you know, your ticker sounds good. Go ahead. You know, we think, what is this, 1880? I want a CT angiogram. I want a blood test. I want to know my electrocardiogram. And that's where urology and sexology are right now. They don't have any ways of generating objective data. So they just prescribe pills on the basis of opinion.
And
Right. So research is one pathway. The research will establish this internationally within 15 to 18 months as the standard.
So does that involve you? You're just trying to engage as many people as possible to use the device so you can just get more and more data?
That's at the company level. But these papers will be coming out of London, Rome, New York, Baylor. There's even one paper coming out of Perth. This will become and the people are using the device to evaluate, how do I monitor testosterone therapy? How do I get men to comply with the exercise regimen after prostate surgery? How can we determine what the right dose of a PDE5 medication, tadalafil, sildenafil, Viagra, Cialis being the leading ones, you know, worldwide? There's a paper going to be ongoing right now with pelvic floor exercises. So we're going to become, you know, a year to 2 years from now, people are going to expect that they get that. If so, they have a problem, they're going to get data. But you made an interesting point before, which is about 50 Shades of Grey. We also want to mainstream the use of erection rings for men. I mean, you've never used one. I never really used one regularly until about 2 years ago. And now I don't make love without it. Why is that? Because I didn't understand that it makes things better. The more blood you retain in the penis, the more sensitive the penis is, the more profound the orgasm. So one of the jokes we have at medical congresses is, overall, how can you tell the difference between a straight doctor and a gay doctor? You ask one question: do you use an erection ring? Straight doctor is like Superman and kryptonite. Oh, I don't need that.
Right.
And the gay doctor is like, oh yeah, like last night, you got a better one. So what straight men most and majority, I'm generalizing right now, but they don't understand is it's really not about need. So it's really about want. I'm putting the issue of ED aside. Do you want to have a more intense orgasm? Do you want to be harder? Do you want to last longer? And most guys, 99% of guys will say, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's what a ring accomplishes. And rings have not gotten there because there's been this manufacturing problem. They're not comfortable. They're pinched. They're awful. In my lifetime, I'm older than you, getting back to 50 Shades of Grey. You know, my mother's not alive anymore. She wouldn't want me to say this. So she's passed. My mother's vibrator was in the bottom dresser drawer in a supply closet. You know, my wife, who's, you know, my generation, you know, she probably owns four or five. Our daughter, who's 29 or 30, she takes them on dates. Vibrators in the United States and the UK, France, they're mainstream. They're acceptable. Back in the 70s or 80s, there's a certain shame associated with using them.
Absolutely. Gone. Like I said, my parents never spoke about anything. I would have
mine too. I don't think I saw my parents kiss more than four or five times.
Yeah. Ever.
So they've been mainstream. And so I would like to see rings mainstream for men, because they will help men not just to get vital data, but help men to perform better, more confidently, et cetera, and have better relationships.
Is there some research here? So I know that us men, we get in our head, right? This head. How much of, say, sexual dysfunction is actually got nothing to do with the physical, but more here? Now, I know it's, again, I'm generalizing, and it's probably never one or the other, and it can be a combination, but is there some aspect of that too, whether it's confidence, whether it's, you know, the people, you know, I'm fairly open, but a lot of people don't have conversations with their partners about it. And so it's just like, oh, well, I'll just.
Yeah. And then next thing you know, they've fallen out of confidence with their partners, and then they start making love, and then their relationships suffer as a consequence.
Mm.
I think that most people, the issue really is confidence. And this symbolizes it. I prescribe tadalafil. I don't know. So far this year, to maybe a half dozen men.
What's that? Sorry.
Tadalafil is Cialis. I don't know what to call it down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Cialis. I got guys who tell me they don't need it. They want it. They want it, but they want it on their night table. Just having it on the night table gives them more confidence, or having it in their wallet, you know, gives them more confidence. Right. They don't actually take it. That's the placebo effect. And that shows how powerful the mental
mind is in this case. Yeah.
So the great thing about a ring is, because one of the I said before, most men's problem with failure, if you will, erectile dysfunction, is not they can't attain erection, but they get it and then they start to lose it. They lose it because their partner says something they don't like, or there's some distraction occurs. The phone rings or whatever. You know,
their mind goes elsewhere.
I'll give you an anecdote just to how, which signified to me how the impact of this just in my own personal life. So when I came up with this soft, comfortable form, it was probably a year ago, February, 2 years ago, February. I live in Montana. My wife and I are making love. And she says in the middle of it, because one of the complaints that men have about women, gay guys don't have this complaint, is in the middle of making love, women will suddenly start talking about something else. They'll be really turned on, but they got to talk about something that happened with the kids, something that happened at work, something happened with their mother.
Yeah.
Right. And they got to talk about it right away. Now, again, I'll come close to Kirsten here. My reaction at age 68, 69 would have been WTF. You can't hold that thought for the 5-10 minutes. What's on your mind? I left the garage door open. Now, it's Montana and it's snowing.
Yeah.
Leaving the garage door open, not something you want to necessarily forget about. So, because being the guy, I had to get out of bed and close the garage door. Well, not the garage door open, but the garage was open into the house. And she left the rear door of her car open. I'm pissed, but I'm still having an erection because I got the ring on. I'm coming upstairs and she calls down, "Oh, Elliot, you know that tequila I like? Can you get some ice and lime?" Now, ordinarily, that would have been another big WTF moment. And I would have probably told her to fetch her own tequila. But instead, I now have the ring on and I'm still about 75% erect. I come upstairs and she laughs and says, "I'm just testing to see how effective that ring is." So a man who has an erection has a very different mindset. You don't curse, you don't get angry, you don't, you know. Yeah. So that was that was interesting. And I've had quite a few, I call them patients, but they're customers, report something similar about the confidence building for both partners, male and female, and male and male. When people are using a comfortable ring, because the problem with those other rings we talked about, you want to walk after 15, 20 minutes. They can only walk for about 30 minutes. Old people, as they get older, they don't really want to make, I'd like to make love for 30 or 40 minutes. So I don't want to have to rush. I don't want to get, you know, there'd be pressure. So the ring, men and the women relieves that pressure. So aside from the profound value of the data, rings should be mainstreamed.
So I suppose two questions. Do you have a competitor in this space at the moment?
On the technology side, there's one company called Atom. They're in London. I tried to order one from them 2 years ago. They're still in pre-orders. They're different. They count the number of nocturnal erections and they measure their duration. We measure firmness as well. And we can also not be worn overnight. We can be worn during sex. So we give people more data, but they're competitors with us. Well, I don't really see them as competitors on the ring side. There are a lot of products. If people want, you know, I think they're probably the best ring other than ours for sex is probably the lasso, but they're really,
but there's no data on that. It's just a device.
No data on it. Right. Correct. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So that's my left brain saying, well, if I'm going to wear something like that, I want data.
Yes.
Back sure. from it as well. So what stage are you at? Is this something where, I don't know, it needs to be...
We're in the market.
Marketing with the online sex shops and all that kind of stuff so that you can just get it out globally easily?
Yeah. Well, right now, we sold 11,000, a little bit over 11,000 products. Okay. About half of our sales are from coming on shows like yours. It's been going on podcasts or webinars.
Okay.
About 15% of our business comes from selling to sex toy stores. That really is not our big business. I'll get to Australia in a moment. Our business in Australia. And the rest really is urologists finding out about us and recommending us, or people looking for a solution and finding us online.
Right.
We don't have the money for immediate for large media buys. There's one company called Giddy by Eddie. They make a ring. This is a hard, uncomfortable plastic ring. Well, they're spending, I've been told, $10,000 a day in marketing. Well, you can sell anything if you have that kind of money. But in Australia, we have two outlets. There's a sex toy chain called Cal Vista that sells our products into sex toy stores. And then there's a woman in Perth, nurse practitioner named Melissa Hadley Barrett, who has a rehabilitation program. It's really great for men after prostate surgery. Just does ED. And she sells our products as well.
Okay. Actually, you mentioned prostate a couple of times. So with the data and what this does, does it have the ability to see some pre-signs of prostate cancer or prostate issues or something like that? Or is it?
It's for after surgery. So before surgery, a man can use our device and the doctor to establish a baseline. Because after surgery, the incidence of impotence is between 20 and 70%, sometimes higher. So people want to know whether do I blame the surgeon or was the problem I had before? But the real value of the device comes afterwards is twofold. One is after prostate surgery, it's months before men can use it to regain sexual function. And a lot of men quit on the rehab. The rehab is hard. I don't know whether you're involved with that with your fitness programs, but you know, the men have to pump, they have to inject, they have to do pelvic floor exercises, and because guys don't see any response, they quit.
If they can see
with their data that they have nocturnal erections, they'll stick with it. They're more likely to stick with the program and recover. Right. And then also, once they do start recovering, our device helps them to sustain an erection because their erections are often weaker in strength.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Terrific. So just a couple more questions for you.
Sure.
I suppose first one, if people want to get the device, how, well, in the US, how do they do it? How do we do it here in Australia?
Yeah.
I'll put the links below in the, when I,
yeah, tell the, you can reach us at myfirmtech.com. People who have questions, and often they do, especially more people who are more like have an engineering background they can speak to me directly. I mean, you can reach me Elliot@myfirmtech.com. Let me just give you Melissa Hadley Barrett's contact information too. She's in Perth. Bear with me for a second.
Maybe rather than do it here, we'll do it offline, and I'll capture it there. So if we're in Australia and want to get it, you can't do it through your website. We'll do it through whichever contact you're going to give me.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. All right. Cool.
And it's likely that, if you're in Sydney, I know we're in sex toy stores in Sydney. I don't know about Melbourne.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And given that, well, obviously it's a very specific piece of equipment, and you're only, like you said, you sold 11,000. What's the, when you're at this stage of a like new product to market, and it's obviously, it's very, very specific. What kind of, fail rates do you get, or returns and that kind of stuff?
It's 0.2%.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah. It's not that hard to use the app. I'd say, it's not that high. We're going to be coming out with a new version of the device, probably November, December. And all the updates are free, but this is first technology. I can remember you probably too, Ken, when a flip phone was new.
Yeah.
Now who's using flip phones? You know, I own a 2014 Tesla, first Tesla in Montana. It's a piece of junk. Now it's a 2022 Tesla, but it's still, I loved it when it came out. I still like the car. So the version, the technology we're selling right now is just going to get better and better and the analysis, as our database expands, the analysis will get better and better as well too. So, you know, right now, I could give you comparative data. I could say, hey, Rob, you want to compare? If you, but we, our data is all private, but you can access data, yes. Get information. You want to compare yourself to other men, age say 50 to 65. Yeah. You know, duration, firmness, we can do that. But as our database expands, if you had diabetes, we can compare diabetics or hypertensives or people taking specific medications. We do have data about SSRI antidepressants, and we do have a little bit of a hypertensive blood pressure medication data as well too. But to your point earlier, that's revolutionary. I mean, to be able to, your doctor might want to put you on something, but you can go to our database and say, no, I don't want that medication. it's not going to be good for me.
Well, I think it's like any illness that we have, isn't it? I think this is where AI can really play a part as well. It's like if we've got the data around a certain thing that's going on for our body, we can then make different decisions around it. We can try different. I mean, like just with the work that I do, I see research almost every week that comes out, and whether it's credible research or not, it's questionable. But anyway, let's just go with the research.
That's always a problem. Go ahead.
There's research coming out that says, oh, do you know how you make this better? Oh, you'd start doing some strength training. You start eating better. You start, looking after your cardiovascular health. I mean, I don't think it matters what happens in life. If we just focus on a healthy lifestyle and doing those things, then that's going to make us better. Of course, the conversation that we don't normally have, which is where I started, is that people aren't talking about their sexual health. So I think when people are more prepared. So I just did a podcast on this yesterday. Well, I've been in business 15 years now. I've been training myself for 36 years, in business full time, 15 years. And when I first started, people were coming in and saying, I want to lose weight. I want to lose weight. I want to lose weight. And then maybe some other things. Since we've had COVID, people are coming in and saying, I want to be healthy. And maybe the second or third thing, they say, oh yeah, I'd like to lose some weight as well. But I know if I get a healthy lifestyle, it's like, oh, finally, people are getting the fact that they need to have a healthy lifestyle. So I think this just is another toy in our toolkit, if you like, that is going to help us make us live happier, more healthy lives.
Well, when it comes to exercise fitness, I would like to see some professional athletes use the device. With all the genetic testing that's going on right now, epigenetic testing, what genetic and epigenetic factors are associated with erectile fitness? But I've had three men last week. These are exercise zealots. They're doctors. They're probably really fit like you. And they were saying, utilizing what they've noticed is that when they have a workout with, they really challenge their VO2, their nocturnal erections go up, and a lot. I mean, from like 3 per night to 5 per night, and that within 24 hours, they this is subjective. They feel that their libido, is also improved.
And I think there's a really strong link there to what we just talked about before, the mindset. You know, you're living your best life. You feel good. You just did a workout. You feel the blood flowing. You feel like your biceps have grown by 6 inches, right? But actually they haven't really grown that much at all. But the feeling that you get from, wow, I feel really great. Come on, let's go.
Then there's monitoring therapy. So early on with the device, one of the early users was, we had a woman who, I was there, a couple in the late 20s. They were trying to get pregnant. They'd recently moved. She bought the tech. She actually contacted me and said, gee, my husband's, I don't know, he was 20, 29 years old. And I'm concerned that he's not performing in bed the way he should. What can you do to help? And I said, well, he's a young guy. My recommendation with a young guy is just get an ordinary ring and try a PDE5 medication. She says, no, we've tried the medications. They're not helping. Well, she bought him the ring, and he was only having one nocturnal erection per night. I mean, you saw last night, I have 5. Oh, wow. He's having one. He's 20. Turned out he's a bodybuilder. He told his wife he was only taking testosterone, but he lied. He was taking steroids. He turned off his natural hormone production, and testosterone is not the only thing that's involved in being potent, you know, being effective. That was, so that was life change for him. He stopped taking, he went honest, stopped taking everything, including testosterone. He still looks fabulous because he didn't really need those things to look great, like that, just had to work out. And they now have a child and they make love 3 or 4 times a week and they're happier. That's the type of story that kind of warms my heart with, you know, with this device.
Yeah.
We had another guy in his 30s who also, he was also an exercise zealot. And then over the course of a year, he started getting more fatigued. He still looked good. And he turned out to have adrenal insufficiency. He got a device. He had very weak nocturnals. So I can't say our device was life-saving, but it really prompted both these men to recognize they had a problem. And we're men. We don't like to speculate about problems, but if we see numbers that are bad, we're more likely to act.
Yeah, to do something about it, yeah. So second last question, is there some equivalent that you're working on for women, or do you have a device for women?
Yeah,
I have heard about some devices that perhaps urologists, and this is coming from here, that urologists have been working on to help with women's pelvic floor and so forth. But yeah.
Well, there is one vibrator that can assess the pelvic floor, which is, and it's the Lioness, and it's sold in Australia too. But I am interested in the pelvic floor, but it's easy to get at what's going on in the pelvic floor in a woman. It's easy in a man too. All you got to do is put a probe into the rectum and you can measure pelvic floor contractions. Right. I'm interested in the health of the clitoris, like I'm interested in the health of the penis. So we have a device. We've tested on 38 women, and we're measuring pulse amplitude and pulse oximetry of the clitoris. And we've obtained a delta when women become aroused. So the only obstacle to commercial, but I think that'll be an even bigger impact than men's devices, because for several reasons. One, women are more into the health than men are. Women are more responsive about their health. But postmenopausal women have all the same problems that men do with diabetes, hypertension, atherosclerosis, yeah, obesity. Premenopausal women have some protection against those things, but premenopausal women are taking hormones and SSRI antidepressants, and those things really mess with their sexuality. And if they had a device, they could then see what's the right dose for them. I hope to launch that in 2025.
So my naivety here, do women have the equivalent nocturnal?
They have nocturnal clitoral tumescence. We're calling it nocturnal clitoral arousal because really it's really an arousal state. Something I didn't know until about 6-7 months ago is that when the penis gets aroused, the blood is contained by the epidermis, the skin around, the blood doesn't come out of the penis. When the clitoris gets aroused, it transudates serum from the blood into the vagina. So most of vaginal secretions are not what I thought was mucus. They're actually blood product. So this blood cells get retained in the clitoris, and then the women have this transudate. So you could actually measure these nocturnal clitoral arousals by measuring the outflow from the clitoris. And we've come up with a sensor that can do that. Now there's probably more detail than you want here, but we've come up with a way of assessing that. But it's a question of money, Rob. So if anyone's listening to the show wants to write me a check for $750,000, we can build that device.
Okay. There is some, you said you've tried it on a few people, but
38 women.
Right. So that one's not like available commercially at the moment.
No,
right.
I don't think it'd be available for another year and a half at our current rate of development.
Right. Okay. All right. Great. Hey, look, this has been, I'm going to ask you a final, I'm going to give you the final closing word in a moment, but look, thank you so much for, you've educated me. I'm sure you've educated a whole bunch of the audience here. You'll provide me with the details offline here, and I will put the links how you can get the products in the US, I'm assuming Europe as well. I've got like people in 62 countries, and Australia too. Most are in the US and Australia. So you can grab that there. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. Thank you for keeping the conversations going, educating your profession, but also us here as well, because I think as men, it is something that we don't talk about, and we shouldn't be ashamed of having the conversations about it and making it more mainstream. So Thank you so much for doing that, Elliot.
Pleasure. And thank you for the opportunity.
And my final question is, what would you say is the most valuable piece of information that you've ever received?
Ever received?
Mm.
Ooh, that's a great question. I would say really, really the most valuable advice that I received from my father was repeatedly, don't be envious, go out and get your own.
Nice work. I like that. Thank you so much, Dr. Elliot Justin. I really appreciate your time here today.
Thank you.